This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 4th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I will tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, and the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was that a week like no other in British Columbia politics? On Monday, Attorney General David Eby revealed that ICBC was driving towards a $1.3 billion deficit. The Crown auto insurer lost $935 million through three quarters of the fiscal year, a legacy of the BC Liberal government's mismanagement and diversion of profits to general revenue to artificially keep taxes down. The finger-pointing between BC Liberal wannabes Todd Stone, who was the ICBC minister, and Mike De Jong, who was the finance minister, intensified. On Wednesday, a provincial court judge gave BC Liberal operative Brian Bonney a 9-month conditional sentence for breach of public trust related to the Quick Wins ethnic pandering scandal. Bonney was not the mastermind, and had been described by some insiders as the fall guy. He did not answer reporters' questions. More later on this podcast. On Friday, Dave Barrett, BC's first NDP premier, died at age 87 after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease. Barrett, who was U.S. educated, ended the W.A.C. Bennett Social Credit Party's dynasty in 1972 and governed for 3 years. The social worker's achievements in office included the formation of the Labor Relations Board, ICBC's public auto insurance, the Agricultural Land Reserve, question period in the legislature, and the Hansard Transcript Service. In 2010, the BC Liberal government named the scenic lookout at Cypress Provincial Park after Barrett because it was he who designated the West Vancouver Wilderness a park in 1975. On Saturday, Andrew Wilkinson became the new leader of the BC Liberal Party, defeating former Surrey Mayor Diane Watts. The margin on the fifth ballot was 600 points under the modified weighted system employed by a party that is dead set against anything but first past the post. Wilkinson is a doctor and lawyer, a former Rhodes Scholar. He was a deputy minister under Gordon Campbell and a minister of the Orwellian Advanced Education Ministry for Christy Clark. His portfolio included the government's propaganda department. In the year before the election, Wilkinson blew $20 million on government advertising. He also spent $59,000 on a pre-election partisan radio ad campaign using funds from his riding office. No other MLA came close. So the torch is passed from the Duchess of Dunbar, Christy Clark, to the Duke of Dunbar, Andrew Wilkinson. It's time for Around the Rim on the Breaker.News podcast, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First stop in the South China Morning Post, Zhao Qin reports that cats, rats, and what a fistful of dodgy dollars in the desert tells us about China's banking system. The Wenchang Road outlet of the Postal Savings Bank of China in the desert city of Wuhai is in the literal and metaphorical Wild West of the Chinese financial world. Wuhai is in the remote western Chinese province of Gansu and is at the center of the country's latest multi-billion yuan banking scandal, based on a fraud that went undetected for years. According to China's banking watchdog, the China Banking Regulatory Commission, a manager at the branch forged 7.9 billion yuan, or $1.2 billion US, in commercial papers and misused 3 billion yuan of client funds to pay the forged bills. There's no public data about the branch's deposits and loans, but the 3 billion yuan involved in the fraud is more than double the city's tax revenues for 2016. Regulators were unaware of the fraud for years, and it only came to light when a small bank more than 3,000 kilometers away on the border of North Korea reported that it had invested billions of yuan into wealth management products at the Wuhai branch, and later found the funds were gone. In the Chosun Ilbo, Lee Yong-soo reports that Seoul lavishes money on North Korean Olympics delegation. The government had already diverted more than 250 million won, or $285,000, from the Inter-Korean Cooperation Fund as of Thursday to help the North Korean team take part in the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. That is expected to snowball once all 500 members of a massive cheerleading squad, an orchestra, and a taekwondo demonstration team arrive in South Korea around the time the Olympics open. The government is not saying what the money has been spent on, despite fears that its support could violate United Nations and U.S. sanctions against the North Korean regime. The expenses of the 47 North Korean athletes who arrived by Thursday will be borne by the International Olympic Committee. But the expenses for hundreds of North Korean cheerleaders and other support officials, including accommodation, transportation, and meals, will likely exceed 2 billion won, or 2.28 million Canadian dollars, a former ministry official said. And finally, Cocky Cockatoo reunited with owners after taking luxury cruise around New Zealand. TVNZ reports that a Cocky Cockatoo that enjoyed a 14-day luxury sail around New Zealand after stowing away on a cruise ship out of Brisbane has been reunited with her owners. The drama started on January 25th when the cruise ship alerted the Ministry for Primary Industries about its feathery stowaway as it approached Milford. The ship's captain contacted Australian and New Zealand biosecurity officials, and they were able to track down the owners since Harry had a microchip and leg ring identifying her as a pet. The Agriculture Department's acting head of animal biosecurity, Jackie South, said on return to Australia, she passed a veterinary examination and has now been returned to her owners, who themselves have just returned from a cruise. Perhaps Harry felt she too needed a holiday, but Australia and New Zealand treat biosecurity very seriously, especially in regards to foreign species. That's Around the Rim for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. First stop is Salmon Arm, British Columbia, where the Salmon Arm Observer's Ashley Wadwani reports, new foundation launched in memory of BC bull rider Ty Pozzebon. A foundation honoring the legacy of BC bull rider Ty Pozzebon is bringing concussion awareness to the forefront, 1 year after the star took his own life and shook his community of fans and family. A postmortem examination of Pozzebon's brain revealed the 25-year-old from Merritt suffered from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, also known as CTE. A controversial disease often caused by repetitive brain injuries, such as repeated concussions, often discussed in contact sports like football and wrestling. Pozzebon is the only confirmed case of CTE in a professional bull rider in North America, and since his death, it has turned a spotlight onto one of the darker components of what's often called the most dangerous sport. The new Ty Pozzebon Foundation, led by Saskatchewan bull rider Tanner Byrne, is looking to raise funds to ensure Canadian pro rodeo sports medicine teams are at all pro rodeo and PBR events across the country, as well as creating a concussion spotting team to be on site at competitions. In Portland, the Oregonian reports, injured naked bike rider sues Portland for $566,000. A bicyclist is suing the city of Portland for $566,000 after he hit a pair of concrete islands on his way home from the World Naked Bike Ride, causing him to crash and break his nose, arm, and two fingers. The Oregonian reported that, according to the lawsuit, a fully clothed Charles Zimmer was pedaling back to his car after participating in the June 2016 ride when his wheels suddenly struck the islands. The lawsuit, filed in Multnomah County Circuit Court, faults the city for failing to put reflectors or lights on the islands and situating them in a travel lane. An employee at the Portland City Attorney's Office says the city does not comment on pending litigation. The suit seeks $66,000 in medical bills plus $500,000 for pain and suffering. The 2018 event is scheduled for June 23rd. Finally, in the Bellingham Herald in Bellingham, Washington, this parade has been around since 1920, now it's in danger of ceasing to exist. Citing a lack of support, the Bellingham-Whatcom Chamber of Commerce will no longer hold the Blossom Time Parade. Bellingham's traditional hometown parade started in 1920 when the Bellingham Chamber of Commerce held a beauty pageant in conjunction with the Tulip Festival Parade. In a news release, the chamber's president and CEO wrote that there has been a lack of sponsor support for the parade and we can no longer continue to operate the parade. Our board of directors voted in January to discontinue the parade, effective immediately, so that the chamber staff could refocus their efforts on chamber programs. Chamber officials said the parade has continued to suffer a lack of community support, and it has been increasingly difficult to attract parade entries. We hope that there is a community organization that would be willing to take over the parade. The president said, it has been a community tradition since 1920, and we are excited to pass the legacy on to another organization. That's Cascadia Calling for this week on the Breaker.News podcast. BC Liberal political operative Brian Bonney was handed a 9-month conditional sentence on January 31st for breach of public trust in connection with the BC Liberal Party's Quick Wins ethnic campaigning scandal. Bonney pleaded guilty last October, canceling a trial that would have stretched until late February, and it would have overshadowed the BC Liberals' election to replace Christy Clark as leader. Bonney will serve his sentence at his home, where he must stay from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. every day of the week. He is banned from consuming liquor and drugs, except for prescriptions. Judge David St. Pierre warned that a breach of conditions would result in jail. In his ruling, St. Pierre said that professional public servants are expected to implement the agenda for the government of the day, and they are expected to put the citizens before political parties. Public office means serving the public and nobody else, he said. Bonney failed to meet that expectation when he breached the trust of British Columbians. The judge found the misuse of government power and resources by Bonney to be a kind of political corruption. Bonney admitted he did wrong, but the judge found Bonney was not the architect of the scheme. During the sentencing hearing, evidence showed that Deputy Chief of Staff Kim Hackstad told Premier Christy Clark in early 2012 about the ethnic campaigning plan. Clark claimed she knew nothing about it until the NDP tabled a leaked copy in the legislature in 2013. The court also heard that former cabinet ministers Harry Bloy and John Yap did not cooperate with the RCMP investigation on advice of their lawyers. If the trial had occurred, Bloy and Yap would likely have been ordered to testify. Outside provincial court in Vancouver, reporters heard from Ravi Kalon, the NDP parliamentary secretary for multiculturalism, and Bonney's lawyer, Ian Donaldson.
The scandal was about deception, it was about manipulating immigrant communities, and it was about a government that cared more about their political interests than they did the public. And so today, although I'm pleased that Brian Bonney has been sentenced, charged and sentenced, I'm disappointed that we were told by the government that they were fully cooperating, and we heard from the Crown today that wasn't the case. I'm also disappointed that the people who were directing his task and directing him did not face charges. John Yap, who's an MLA, was mentioned in court several times, did not cooperate, and at the same time was not charged. And then many other people that were involved are working on various leadership campaigns, and life goes on. So it's both a positive and a negative for today.
So the evidence here was that Mr. Bonney was not directing this, that he was taking orders from other people.
Yeah.
Is there any disappointment that he's the only one that's being held accountable?
Well, I suppose the public might be disappointed. The checks and balances that ought to have prevented this all happening didn't operate in the way they ought to have, and things slipped through and leaked through. I don't think anybody involved in this is nefarious or evil, but people get carried away and aren't paying close enough attention to where the line ends, and they have to.
Bonney later emerged from court 2 hours after he was sentenced and did not answer any questions from reporters.
Give us a comment, Brian. Brian, how did you afford the defense? Ian Donaldson said that you haven't had any jobs, you've been on commission. How could you afford the legal bills? Are you involved at all still with the party? Brian, are you supporting any leadership candidates? Will you ever sit down for an interview to talk about what this has done to you?
Bob Mackin, TheBreaker.News, Vancouver. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or group that has made a difference. A virtual version of British Columbia's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Olympic athletes and coaches from British Columbia. The 23rd Olympic Winter Games get underway February 9th in Pyeongchang, South Korea, with 92 nations and nearly 3,000 athletes competing. There will be no National Hockey League players, but North Korea is sending athletes for combined women's hockey and sliding teams with their southern counterparts. Russia won't officially be there, but a delegation of Olympic athletes from Russia will be, as discipline for the state-sponsored Sochi 2014 doping conspiracy. But despite International Olympic Committee sanctions, 169 Russians will compete under the IOC flag. Canada is sending a team of 225 athletes to the Games of Ice and Snow. It's the second biggest delegation after the 242-strong American team. 27 athletes who call British Columbia home will be under the Maple Leaf flag. They are Jack Crawford, Manuel Osborne Paradis, Broderick Thompson, Larkin Osman, Simon D'Artois, Dave Duncan, Roz Gronewit, Teal Harrell, Andy Naud, Kelsey Serwa, Cassie Sharp, India Sherritt, Marielle Thompson, Yuki Toboda, Megan Agosta, Reed Watts, Zoe Bergerman, Carrie Brenneman, Tess Critchlow, Darren Gardner, Kevin Hill, Derek Livingston, Mercedes Nickel, Spencer O'Brien, Marilia O'Dayan, Chris Robinski, and Brooke Voigt. There are also 11 coaches from British Columbia: Serge Duga, Elaine Dagg-Jackson, Zdenek Pazderek, Ravi Walia, Rob Kober, Mark McDonnell, Steve Omishel, Trennan Painter, Saeed Kozovich, Stanley Hare, and Jan Wengelin. So, a virtual Nanaimo bar for all of you. Uphold sportsmanship and make Canada proud. The games run through February 25th. If you'd like to nominate someone for the virtual Nanaimo bar, send me an email, bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast for February 4th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Again, the email address is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news, and you can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.